Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, March the 10th. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about the border. Continues to be a huge story. President Biden. We politely call him the invisible president because nobody ever sees him. And I'm being polite. I mean, I'm just being honest about it. Well, he's supposed to give a primetime speech on Thursday night. Has not done a press conference since he became president. And apparently he's not going to do the State of the Union. You know, the traditional State of the Union, when you go to the Congress and give the State of the Union, apparently he's going to submit it in writing or do it differently. But he's not going to go and give that, you know, 40-minute or 45-minute, or sometimes some presidents, will go an hour speaking. He's not going to do that. How he's going to, I guess he'll just write it up like they used to back in the 19th century. I mean, they'll just write it up and send it in or whatever it may be. But not exactly sure what he's going to do. But he needs to start answering some questions about the border, and that's where I want to begin tonight. There's a lady who has a position of prominence, and I think her last name is Jacobson, who was speaking today, and I was trying to explain the situation on the border, and then she decided to do something in Spanish or say something in Spanish, but she ended up saying in Spanish the opposite of what she meant to say. She meant to say, the border is closed, but actually said in Spanish, the border is not closed. And it was a little comical, to say the least. But I think it really shows that this problem in the border, it's starting to get a little tension. There's a little tension there in the White House because I think they're starting to realize how quickly this can get out of hand. And in fact, it is out of hand already. I mean, we don't have the resources to process all these people. And, you know, it's not fair to be asking our Border Patrol people to be doing babysitting of kids. That's not their job. So I think the White House is starting to feel a little pressure that maybe they need to say something. Now, President Biden is going to be speaking to the nation on Thursday night, but he's not going to talk about the border, I don't think. This is a primetime speech from the Oval Office, I assume, when, you know, he's going to talk about, I guess, COVID, you know, the one-year anniversary of COVID when we locked down the economy a year ago. And he's going to talk about the successes, and we've had successes. And hopefully he'll give President Trump a little credit. I actually think President Biden would help himself politically tomorrow night if he actually got out of the political game and said, you know what, let's just be honest about it. You know, President Trump and his people deserve a little credit for the vaccines. And, you know, kind of get away from the politics. I'm not sure he can do it because the people running him are so anti-Trump that they simply will not allow him to do it. Because I have real problems with President Biden and how much he is in control of the situation. I don't know. He looks awfully weak and frail, and he looks like a man who's not really in charge. I hate to say that about the President of the United States, but that's the way he comes across, as a man who's not in charge. So exactly how much he's going to say or how much credit he's going to give the Trump administration, I don't know. But if I was advising him, I would say, look, you know, you could gain a little respect from those of us who voted for Trump, and there's 75 million of us who did. You could get a little respect from us if you would give President Trump a little credit and say, you know what, this was an American project, and the Trump administration deserves a little bit of credit here. And how we got these vaccines. And not only that, but the incredible job that the private and the public sector did last summer under President Trump. So I think it would help him a lot if he did that. Whether he will, I don't know. The people around him, I don't think they want him to do that. But I think if President Biden was really in control of his situation, he would tell the people around him, people, I'm going to say it because I need to say it because we got to bring the country together. We got to give the man some credit, President Trump, for what happened. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. It'll be probably a 10 or 15 minute speech from the Oval Office. I don't expect any earthquake from this speech, but, you know, probably something similar to that nomination speech that he gave back in August or whenever that was. Probably something similar to that. He'll be reading from a teleprompter, and I don't expect any earthquakes or dramatic changes. But I do think that he needs to do a press conference very soon. I guess they've promised a press conference by the end of the month, and he needs to answer questions about the border. I mean, they were trying. I mean, today he was out somewhere today, and some reporters were asking him about the border, and he will not take questions. He will not take questions from the media. And I think that, you know, I kind of like to see somebody in the media get angry about that. I don't know. I mean, when President Trump was president, he took a lot of questions. In fact, I think sometimes he took too many questions. One of the criticisms that I had of President Trump is that he was overexposed, that he took too many questions. He was on TV every day. And I think that probably created a little bit of Trump fatigue, if I could put it that way, on the part of many people who just wanted him to just relax a little bit. Well, whatever, that's I do think that was a factor. There was a certain saturation factor with President Trump because he was always talking to the press. He was always answering questions. He was like on the front of every single thing in his administration, which is good in a way, but it's like anything else. Everything can be saturated. I don't care how good you are. You can reach a point of saturation. And President Biden is the exact opposite of President Trump. He never talks. You never see him. So it is interesting. But President Biden will be speaking on Thursday night. We'll give you our thoughts on the speech. And then I guess he's going to do a press conference. And hopefully, he answers a question or two about what's happening on the border, because nothing's good happening on the border. We'll be right back. We're going to take a little break. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. I hope one of the questions that a member of the media will ask President Biden whenever they do have a press conference, I hope one of the questions is, Mr. President, exactly who is benefiting from this situation on the border? Because there was a very interesting article that came out today. It had to do with Mexico. And apparently they were quoting a Mexican official. It was not the president of Mexico, but somebody in Mexico who was basically saying that President Biden's actions have given the cartels a tremendous amount of business because the cartels are now moving people and they're making money. It may not be exactly the cartels, but it's clearly criminal elements in Mexico who are benefiting from this. And, you know, you pay them and they bring you to the border. They bring your kids to the border. And that's the kind of criminal activity, you know, human smuggling, basically, that's what that is, human trafficking, whatever the right word is, not exactly the kind of activity that I think Mexico wants to be involved in or wants to see happening in its borders. So, you know, President Biden, he needs to explain to the American people, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this? What is the plan? What is the objective? And what is going to be the benefit of opening the border like this? Because so far, I don't see any, absolutely none, from this situation. Well, today the House, voted for the $1.9 trillion They call it a rescue plan. It's really not. About $800 billion, half of it, let's say roughly, is actually about COVID. The other half, or maybe more, is all about bailing out blue states and blue cities. And this is so amazing to me that, and again, I go back to what I said before about Joe Manchin of West Virginia. He had a chance to stop this, and he went along with the bill. And he did not do the country any good by going along with this bill. He could have literally stopped this on Saturday. He could have said, no, this is too much money. We got to come down to $800 billion. We got to focus on giving people money, people who actually need it. But I'm really disappointed that Joe Manchin, who could have stopped this, didn't. And he was the one who made this possible. Without his vote, this would have never, or at least this bill, would have never gotten out of the Senate. Very bad bill. I think it's a tremendous amount of waste and just political payoff. They're basically paying off blue cities and blue governments in many places like New York, Illinois, California, cities that have been poorly managed, and now they're going to be bailed out by the American people in the name of COVID. What a joke. What a joke that is. Absolute joke. Well, there are some Senate seats coming up in 2022. Of course, it becomes more important now because of the 50-50 Senate. And the Republicans are going to be defending Ohio, where they will have a new candidate because Senator Portman will not be running for re-election. I think they've got a pretty good chance of keeping that because Ohio has been trending Republican. Wisconsin should be competitive. We don't know if Senator Johnson runs for re-election. Pennsylvania could be the tough one because, that's more of a Democrat state. But a lot depends on the mood of the public in 2022, whether it's Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, a couple of others. You know, the country in 2022 could really be on a Republican wave. And if that happens, similar to what we saw in 1994 or in 2010, you know, if you have a wave like that, 2014, the other time, if you have a wave like that, the Republicans could end up holding on to what they have. And I think they've got an excellent chance of picking up Georgia, one of those two seats. And they have, a fair chance of picking up Arizona. It all depends who they run in Arizona. But, I mean, Georgia and Arizona are two elections where you will have an election in 2022 because both of those seats were, you know, being held by people who were holding on to somebody else's term or completing somebody else's term. So I think Georgia and Arizona are potential, certainly Georgia. And depending on the mood of the country, I mean, it could be a nice day for the Republicans in the House or in the Senate. I'm optimistic. I think the Republicans are going to do well in 2022, but it's too early, a little bit too early to know for sure. Well, let me tell you something about Cuban history. On this day in 1952, March 10th, 1952, this was the day that Batista overthrew President Prio Sacarras, who at the time was serving his term, and Batista could not run for election because of the term limits. So he decided to overthrow President Prio. And in doing so, he not only upset Cuban democracy, but in many ways set moving forward a lot of the things that would happen later. And it's a shame because Cuba was doing very well economically and it just had to get its political act together. But what Batista did on this day in 1952 made things a lot worse for the later 50s, and of course Castro in 59, but it didn't have to happen because Cuba was doing well economically, but politically, of course, it needed a lot of help. Batista thought he was helping Cuba by overthrowing Prio, but I think he ended up hurting Cuba and ended up hurting his legacy, which I think is also very important. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Enjoy yourself, and we'll see you the next time.